Akiva Eldar, as you know, is the former political analyst of Haaretz, their main political commentator. He's now with Al Monitor, which is an interesting new venture, a journalistic venture that brings about voices from around the Middle East. And Akiva is writing for their Israel Pulse. You're welcome to visit Al Monitor's website and read Akiva's writing there. He is joining us right now. Just entered the room, and will share his wisdom with us. There's a lot to talk about, actually. Thank you, Akiva, for making it so quick. Just to let you know, just arrived from the airport and on a flight from Boston.
From snow to snow.
And we have a lot to talk about, Akiva. There's the issue of Iran. There is a quite public debate between Israel and the United States on both the issue of Iran and the Israeli-Palestinian negotiations. There is a new, apparently, U.S. proposal on the table regarding security arrangements between Israel and the future state of Palestine once negotiations bring about the creation of that state. So where should we start?
I would like, good morning, everyone. Good to have you. I need to take a breath, and I'll be okay.
Yeah.
I just jumped out of the plane. I just looked at the paper today at the airport. I saw the report in the Wall Street Journal about Netanyahu's presentation on the Saban Forum yesterday. And I want to read you a few words. He says, our best efforts to reach Palestinian-Israeli peace will come to nothing if Iran succeeds in building atomic bomb, Mr. Netanyahu said. A nuclear-armed Iran would give even greater backing to the radical and terrorist elements in the region. It would undermine the chances of arriving at a negotiated peace. Now, on the plane, I made some very small amendments to this statement, and I will read you my idea of how I would have rephrased his statement. Our best efforts to make sure that Iran does not succeed in building atomic bomb is making peace with the Palestinian. Israeli peace will come to nothing if there will be a third intifada and expansion of settlements in the occupied terrorists. This would give even greater backing to the radical and terrorist elements in the region. It would undermine the chances of arriving at negotiated peace with the Palestinian and negotiated deal with Iran. How do you like this, Ori?
So what you've done actually is you've taken Netanyahu's linkage and you've turned it on its head.
Exactly. Actually, this is not original.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In Tzipi Livni did actually the same by saying that reaching a negotiated peace with the Palestinian will help the international community to twist arms or whatever to reach a settlement that will be satisfactory to Israel with Iran. So, first of all, I'm very happy that eventually Netanyahu made the linkage, because for a very long time he refused to make any linkage between the two. He said, well, even if Israel will reach an agreement with Iran, it will not change the or reduce the appetite of the Iranian to get the nuclear capability, military capability. So first of all, he sees the linkage. And I think that he put himself in a trap here.
Interestingly, you know, just hours after he made these comments, and maybe that represents the state of the relationship now between the U.S. government and the Israeli government, the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Dan Shapiro, went on Israel radio and said in Hebrew, which he speaks, that there is no linkage, that there is no linkage between the two, that they're not related.
Well,
what's happening here between the U.S. and Israel?
Well, first of all, it shows that my old friend Dan Shapiro should get better contacts to the State Department and do something about this, because for a very long time, Ori, the State Department and the White House made this linkage, and it's even broader than this. The linkage is not only between the Israeli, the Israeli and Palestinian negotiations and Iran, it's actually more comprehensive. It has to do with the entire Arab world. The State Department is working on a big package that will say the deal is ending the Arab-Israeli conflict using the Arab Peace Initiative, which offers Israel end of conflict and normalization with the entire Arab country, the entire Arab world, all the members of the Arab League. And as you noticed, and maybe all of you, is that Secretary Kerry is very careful to brief the foreign ministers of the Arab League in all his moves and to get their full support in the negotiations that Martin Indyk is conducting with the Palestinian. So what we are looking at is a new equation. It's actually end of conflict, end of occupation, end of settlements, for end of threat, which means to isolate Iran, which, as you know, is both is not an Arab state and not a Sunni state. And and in other words, what my attempt to rephrase what Bibi said in Saban is to say we are going to put Iran in a position where they will not only have to put an end to their nuclear ambitions, but also to terror. Because if you look at the State Department's report, and actually this is what Bibi is saying, and that was issued in last May, they are, Bibi is right about this. They're channeling money and training Hezbollah. They are sending money and weapons and missiles to Hamas and helping them. So Iran will have to change. But what Iran is doing is using the occupation and using the settlement policy and the Israeli position, because, you know, I would ask Bibi a simple question. If Iran will agree to put an end to this nuclear, to whatever, the IAEA, they will comply with verification, everything will be perfect. Would you, Mr. Netanyahu, be willing to freeze the settlements? Would you, Mr. Netanyahu, be willing to divide Jerusalem? Would you accept, would you follow the roadmap that was presented by President Bush, 43, and remove the illegal outposts? So he made this linkage, and now he will have to eat it.
I want to take just one moment, Akiva, to make a housekeeping comment here. Since we started the briefing call and I made my welcoming comments, many people have joined us. So I just wanted to remind people how to ask a question, and you can ask, you can signal to me that you want to ask a question at any time. So in order to do that, you punch five star. That will tell me that you want to ask a question, and when we open for Q&A, which will be in just a few minutes, I will call upon you to ask your question. When you do punch five star on your phone, you will hear a recording saying something like hand raised, and when I open your line for you to ask your question, you will hear something like line unmuted or something of that sort, and you will know that you're next in line to ask a question. So at any point, you can hit five star, and I will call on you to ask a question. Akiva, maybe a quick comment about a new development that we've seen in the negotiations, and that is that the United States, for the first time since the beginning of this round of negotiations, has put something on the table. We had General Allen, who is responsible for the security aspect of the negotiations, bring about what the U.S. characterized as ideas. It may have been more than just that. Does that signal a new phase in the negotiations?
Yeah, it is. It is signaling, first of all, I don't believe that it is just security. There must be something else. And this was not exclusively made in the USA. This was designed after discussions with both the Israelis and the Palestinian. And I believe that Kerry, I give him the, you know, at least the benefit of the doubt that he is smarter than we, some cynics in the media think, and that he knows that before he puts something on the table, he has to check it with the parties, with both parties, to make sure that they don't say no. So everybody will have to play hardball and hard to catch, but I have a good reason to believe, and I'm not just guessing, that this is something that the Palestinians will be able to accept, but it is, let's go back to the linkage game, it is linked, of course, to territories, to the borders issue. If we talk about, for instance, international or Israeli-Palestinian, Jordanian troops on the Jordan Valley, it means that the Jordan Valley is going to be the border. And it is just the beginning of a new phase. This is the beginning of the third trimester, the last trimester of the 9 months. And let's see what happens when Bibi will have to pass in the government the next round or the next phase of releasing Palestinian prisoners. The next 26, the third group of prisoners. And I think that what Kerry is doing is raising the price of his failure, which means now Netanyahu and Abu Mazen know that it's not just another attempt, you know, or we both of us, we've been there for so many years, more than 20 years, so they come and they go, and we people at the Americans for Peace Now, and then the media, we are here to cover it and to work for it. So I think that what Kerry is doing, every visit, the price of the failure of the administration is getting higher and higher.
The price for the administration or the price for the negotiating parties?
Good question. Both.
Both. How so? What do you mean?
And nobody wants to pay this price.
Exactly. Yeah. So how is it being raised for the parties, let's say?
For instance, let's fantasize that Kerry will say at the end of the 9 months that, sorry, but I did my best and I failed. What will the New York Times write? What will Haaretz write? What will I write? Will say, what have you done? I mean, you, in 9 months, what you have gained is the release of 102 Palestinian terrorists that are out there in the streets now. You have turned a blind eye to more settlement activities. Because, as you know, mm-hmm. in Americans for Peace Now, because you are doing the monitoring, you know that it is still growing, but since there is a peace process, nobody is putting his foot down on this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So every day, every new unit, every prisoner that is out in the street is putting a higher price tag on the failure of Kerry, which I don't think that this is what he wants. He's been in this business for 30 years, and I don't believe that he wants to end his career with on his watch. We had 102 prisoners and how many hundreds or thousands of new units in the settlements.
In the settlements, I understand. Good. Open the call for questions. And our first question, as I think it's now become a tradition, comes from Frank Bamberger. Frank, if you're with us, go ahead and ask a question.
Hi, Akiva. Thanks for doing what you're doing.
Thank you. for being with us.
You may have noted President Obama at Saban talking about that the peace is going to be achieved incrementally in steps.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the way you see things as going? And what do you see as the steps along the way?
If I may just interrupt just for a second, Frank, my understanding of the president's comments was that the implementation will be a matter of a process or a major of stages.
Exactly.
In other words, he was asked about the implementation in Gaza. How do you get around the problem of the West Bank and Gaza being two separate entities governed by two separate governments? And there he said that he thinks it's going to be a matter of stages. So just wanted to clarify that.
That's thank you, Ori, because that's exactly how I read the statement, which says we have to draw the borders. We have to agree on everything, but we can get there step by step. Because the Oslo Agreement offered the parties 5 years. As we know, the 5 years have expired. So we are not going back to negotiating the next phase and then, you know, an interim agreement on an interim agreement. No, this has to be the final settlement with phases. There will be a timeline, there will be a sequence, but there has to be a clear light at the end of the tunnel, and the length of the tunnel and the stops on the way to the final destination, this will have to be very clear right at the beginning, and this will not be negotiated after they sign the agreement.
Okay.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from a caller from the area code 416. I don't have your name. Go ahead.
It's Howard Edelman from Toronto.
Hi.
Akiva, thanks. I wanted to ask you about your original take on Netanyahu's making Iran a condition. I took it slightly differently, and it's not at odds with what you said, but it gives a different angle on it. I took it as a way of Netanyahu retreating and beginning to recognize that a deal in both directions was really possible, and that he was saying, if we get Iran, then we can get a Palestinian-Israeli agreement, and that he's really now really ready for such an agreement. That's just my take on it, and I'd like your opinion.
I'm afraid that, you know, you're too optimistic, because the Netanyahu's red line or his demands from Iran are impossible to reach. Iran will not say, you know, I can make maybe the analogy between the demand from Iran to give up its right to enrich uranium, like the demand from the Palestinian to say loud and clear, we give up our right of return. There are certain things that you cannot do. You can do, but you cannot say. Because this is a matter of national pride. This is a matter of domestic politics. And what Netanyahu wants is to humiliate Iran. He wants to declare victory. And this is not going to happen. So solving the Iranian conflict and solving the Palestinian conflict in his eyes is very different from what the Palestinian and the Iranian, the way they see it.
Thank you, Akiva. You know, one other thing that happened with Kerry's last visit here, in Israel, in other words, is that he met with Yair Lapid, the head of Yesh Atid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's been such a meeting before. And interestingly, when Lapid came out of the meeting, he said that it's about time to kick it up a notch or to kick up a gear or something like that in the negotiations with the Palestinians. And some commentators in Israel read it as a raising a flag for Netanyahu, saying your coalition is not as stable as you may think, and if there's no progress on the Israel-Palestinian negotiations, we may consider leaving.
Yeah.
How do you see it? What do you think is happening there?
Actually, what Yair Lapid said is that we will not stay in this coalition if there will be no progress, if the negotiations will end up with nothing, and it will be Israel's fault. Of course, it will be, if it's again a no partner, then they will not leave. But I think if we want to be cynical, this is an opportunity, a golden opportunity for Lapid to get off the train before he breaks his head, before the accident happens. Because actually, the his train is keep riding on bumpers.
So what is the train and what is the accident? What do you see happening?
Well, the train, his train was the alliance, the Lapid Bennett train.
Right. Naftali Bennett was the head of
the head of the Beit Hayehudi, the Jewish home. Yeah, which is the settlers' party, which, of course, this is something very unnatural, chuppah between the two. Was a very strange wedding, and it's a wedding between Catholic and Al Qaeda, and because the. You know, these people, half of his party, the faction, the Knesset, I'm sure they voted Meretz and not Yesh Atid.
They're all progressive Israelis.
They are very progressive.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting his campaign money from Meretz supporters.
Mm-hmm.
People who are, I'm sure, also helping Shalom Achshav. I see them in demonstrations in Israel of Shalom Achshav. So it was, as long as there was not something tangible between us and the Palestinians, they could say, well, there are other issues, social justice. And this is when Kerry comes in. Kerry, when, you know, he, each time he's coming to Israel, and each time it looks like the price in not only in Israeli-Palestinian currency, but Israeli-American currency, the relationship between Israel. He doesn't want Lapid that on his watch will be a showdown both between the Israelis and the Palestinians and Israel and the United States. So for him, and since as a minister of finance, he didn't do very well, and the polls are showing that they are down from 19 to 10 seats, that for him, this can be a golden opportunity to jump off the train.
I see what you mean. Okay. Good. Just to remind callers again, because I see that quite a few have joined us in the last few minutes, to ask a question, you dial 5-star. That signals to me that you want to ask, and I will call on you. Our next question comes from a caller from area code 541. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. My name is John Hickox. I'm calling from Oregon. I think the death of Nelson Mandela in the last week has brought back, at least to my attention, the difference between the situation of apartheid in South Africa and apartheid now in Israel and Palestine. The major difference is that in South Africa, it was a tough situation. But we and people around the world, but especially Americans and Canadians, opposed it in mass, millions and millions of people. which is what finally brought de Klerk to the point of saying, okay, we're there. In Israel and Palestine, we as Americans are supporting the occupation and the building of settlements and the wall and so on and so forth as an entity. So optimism and pessimism are not useful words for me in this situation. I think it's I like to go to Bill William Sloan Coffin's it's the difference between hope and despair. And my hope comes from the fact that we need to define the problem clearly and then deal with it. I don't think, and so what I'm coming to, and I'm looking for a comment from you, is I don't think, are going to gain anything from diplomacy and politics and the kinds of things that Kerry is doing that have been done now for 45, 50 years. I think it's going to take, as it took in South Africa, Americans en masse saying, enough is enough. I appreciate your...
I think that when people ask me, what can I do for Israel? Yesterday I did a talk for J Street in Providence, and people who care about Israel are asking what we can do. And I think that comparing Israel to South Africa is not very constructive, because this puts people off. Whether it's a legitimate analogy or not, it puts people off. They say, well, we are not racist, and this is a political issue. It's another conflict between two different communities. We have history. We have blah, blah, blah. Don't go into this. What I'm saying is that it's our interest. It is an Israeli Zionist interest. And if once Netanyahu said a two-state solution, you need to ask him is two-state solution. What does it mean? Where, like Martin Indyk said in an interview to me in Haaretz a few years ago, is that where do Netanyahu think the Palestinian state will be established, on the moon? So it's a matter of a win-win situation. It's our interest to put an end to the occupation, because what it is doing to us, the settlements are not only an obstacle to peace, this is a minefield to peace, because an obstacle is something you can build a detour, you can jump over it. But we are now sitting in the center of a minefield. Wherever we go, we will step on a mine, and instead of removing the mines, to put more mines doesn't make any sense.
Thanks, Akiva. The next question comes from Gregory Lowe.
Yes. Hello. I want to come back once more to your opening statement. The fact that you are right and that Netanyahu is wrong doesn't mean that you have convinced him that he has to change his mind. So who is going to change his mind? Because that's the key thing.
Well, once I will change his mind, I'll have to look for a job, because then I'm out of that.
No, I mean Netanyahu has to change his mind.
No,
He has to change his mind, but what's the evidence, or what is the pressure that we can exert to make him change his mind? Is Tzipi Livni capable of changing his mind? Who is going to do that?
His mind is are two things. The Israeli public opinion and the American public opinion. Once he will realize that the price that he will have to pay, the personal price, political price, in terms of his political life expectancy, will be better off if he changes his mind than if he doesn't. He will make the right thing. Like Abba Ibn used to say, he will make the right thing after he will exhaust all the other options.
And but that would take another 20 years.
No. And here comes the American, the administration and the Congress. Because I'm sure that he still remembers what happens in the early 90s when President Bush Sr. refused to give him the loan guarantees, and the Israeli people were not willing to tolerate a showdown between the United States and Israel. They, you can, maybe he can convince them that the Palestinians are not partners, but he cannot convince them that the United States of America is not our partner. So it depends on you people, much.
Yeah, but...
I'm sorry, go ahead, Gregory.
I'm saying we people here are not united. You just have to look at Eric Cantor. He is not united with us.
So make him change his mind.
But you
know how you make
thing.
People change
You can't change
their
Eric
mind.
Cantor any more than you can change Netanyahu.
Oh, no.
Eric Cantor already said yesterday he wants to increase the sanctions.
Well, if Americans for Peace Now, J Street, will be able to raise more money, I'm sure that they will change their mind, because I know one or two things about American politics.
How much money do we have to give J Street? They just called me yesterday.
More than they give to AIPAC.
Let's go to the next question. The next caller is from area code 202 right here in Washington, D.C. Go ahead, please.
This is Tom Getman, Ori. Hi, Akiva. Thank you so much for doing this. I was an NGO executive in Palestine for 5 years and was a UN representative for 9 years in Geneva. And the thing that I'm wondering about from your perspective, is the media changing in its representation? Just in the article in the Times yesterday about the Bedouin in the South Hebron Hills and in the
Negev.
They're still calling the media here is calling it resettlement rather than forced removals. But your friend Max Blumenthal is being very overt about some of these things. It reminds me of the biblical adage, the sword we use pierces our own hearts, the trap we set, our foot gets caught in. Do you see part of this movement that the last few questions have been pertaining to is beginning to happen? Is there more of an uprising, particularly among our Jewish relatives and friends, in regard to standing up to the suicidal course?
Yeah, in a Machiavellistic way, the Likud, which is now, it's not the Likud even of the Sharon's Likud. It is more like Hatchia, if you remember this.
Right.
I think that they are doing our job, because it's getting so bad that it wakes people up. Because it's not like at Sharon's time and Olmert's time, of course, that people were still hoping that it's Nixon going to China.
Right.
Bibi will go to Sheldon Adelson. This is as far as he goes. and to China, actually, because this is where Sheldon is doing business. So I think that now it becomes very clear that we need a new government, that Netanyahu will not do this. And the media is also, and because this is another contribution of Kerry, because every time that he comes to Israel, he changes the agenda, because the headlines are about what's happening between us and the Palestinian, and not so much about the prices of cottage cheese.
Right.
This alone is an important contribution, and I believe or I hope that the least that he will do is Kerry is offer us a full report of what happened between in the negotiations, and this is why it's important that Martin Indyk is sitting there. So if we, the Israelis and the Palestinian and the American people, will know who is the real partner and who was not a real partner.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Akiva. I promise to you that I won't keep you here beyond 12:15, and we're getting there. So I wanted, although we have a few more questions from participants, one thing that I wanted to make sure that we touch upon, because it's important, is the state of U.S.-Israel relations and how Bibi is conducting them. You were asked a question earlier about Bibi, whether he has it in him to strike a deal at the end, and if I understand correctly from what you said, given the right amount of pressure, the answer is yes, that he would do it, could do it. But in the meanwhile, why is he venturing into this conflict with the United States, frontal conflict with the U.S., when we have all been raised on the truism that Israel's greatest strategic asset is its relationship with the United States? What's he thinking?
Honestly, I'm not sure if I can figure out. Sometimes I think that Bibi believes, and I know that his wife for sure believes it. Actually, I had dinner last night with her sister-in-law, who was a professor at Massachusetts University.
Small world.
Yeah, and actually they're not on speaking terms, because her, I don't know if you know, her nephew, Sarah's nephew, is a refusnik, Yoni Benalzi.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Netanyahu really believes that Bibi should be the president of the United States.
What do you mean by that?
Well, she said it.
She said that.
had he been running for president in the United States, he could win it easily. So I think that even if you see, you look at his conduct with taxpayers' money, you know, the amount of money that they were spending on ice cream and on candles.
Yeah, it's been all over the Israeli press in the last few days.
Oh, yeah. You want to elaborate, so go ahead.
No, that's fine.
And I think that he should be reminded that the superpower is the United States, and Israel is a small country in the Middle East that cannot survive 1 hour without the support of the United States. Now, he smells weakness, and he smelled weakness here in Washington. He smelled a division between the White House and Capitol Hill, and he's good at this, as divide and rule.
And he feels that he managed to get away with twisting Obama's arm in the past.
Yeah, and now that he will use again, you know, mobilizing Republicans against Democrats, and he, you know, the, next year you have the midterm elections, so the Democrats will be, so he, and this was the name of the game when he led Shamir to confrontation, where he said, I will get the loan guarantees and the settlements. I can have it both ways because I control Washington. And as long as you have a Democratic White House and a Republican House, then he believes that this is where he likes to play, and that he's a good player here. And as you mentioned, the American politics is quite cynical, mm-hmm. and it's, after all, I know about a congressman who stopped his relationship with J Street because they asked the president not to veto a resolution against settlements. Not to mention, and you know whom I mean.
Yeah. So something that Israeli prime ministers have done in the past, but Netanyahu is doing it publicly without any...
yeah, you know, he's doing from the jump board what kids are doing from the water end.
Yeah, I think we should explain to our participants that there is a saying in Israeli colloquial Hebrew that everyone urinates in the pool, but not everyone does it from the jumping board.
Exactly.
So
Bibi is doing it from the jumping board, and you know, and they don't throw him out.
They don't throw him out.
If I would do it, you know, they would put me behind bars.
Yeah. One last question, and then I'll let you go. I think that in the past few days, both Secretary Kerry and particularly President Obama indicated that the 9-month period that was allotted to the peace negotiations is flexible. It may not be 9 months. It could be extended and so on and so forth. If you were to draw a scenario today, or a couple of likely scenarios of how these negotiations are going to proceed, what would be your scenario?
If there will be progress, if they will see that we are on the right track and we need more time, as Rabin used to say, you know, dates are not sacred, so they may give them more time. But people are not getting younger, and Abu Mazen is turning 76 or something like this, and he is not going to stay there forever. And he will wait until September, no longer than this. And they might go to the UN, and the Europeans are fed up with paying the wages of the Palestinian Authority while they don't see any progress. So the PA, which the Palestinian Authority, was not meant to be a permanent settlement. Okay, and it won't last forever. The American taxpayers actually are paying the salaries instead of we, the Israeli taxpayers,
mm-hmm.
paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
As you remember, when we had the military government, we Israelis had to pay the wages. So I think there will be a deadline. And I think that also if Tzipi Livni will realize that Bibi is playing with her, there is a limit to even to politician cynicism. So she may be the beginning of snowball
mm-hmm.
trend
mm-hmm.
or the domino dice that will fall out of this coalition.
But you don't see Secretary Kerry come May walking away from it saying, I tried, I gave it my best, you know, now you're stewing your own juices.
I'm willing to put the little money I have on this. You agree with me?
I agree.
I'm not just going to walk away.
Yeah. Well, if that's an optimistic tone, then we can end on this optimistic tone.
If I was pessimistic, I wouldn't live where I do.
Akiva, thank you so much for joining us. I know that it was a haste for you to rush in from the airport, and I really appreciate you did that. I also appreciate all of you for joining us on this America's for Peace Now briefing call. We will have more coming up soon.